Hey, this is Jeff. We'll get to the show in a second. If you want to support the show or find back episodes of the show or find our other podcasts or find articles or quotes on early learning, all that kind of stuff is over at playvolutionhq.com. We're trying to curate the early learning world. Check it out. Here's the show. Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
What are we talking about today? Somebody's got the note card away from me, so I don't really remember.
I took the note card.
What are we talking about?
The direct question was how to handle children role-playing life experiences that we might be uncomfortable with. And the specific examples given were smoking, gunplay, etc.
How do you want to jump into this? I guess my way of handling them is to take a breath and step back and stay out of the way, like I do with kinds of play that make me comfortable. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Thanks for listening. But should we talk about that more?
Well, maybe a little bit.
Okay.
I think we've said it a lot in the last couple of episodes that we've recorded, just that we need to be very mindful of our own stuff that we project onto children's play, our own morals, our own values, our own shouldas, couldas, and wouldas. And I think it's perfectly acceptable to acknowledge that you might have some kind of really big, huge, like, reaction to some of the things that children do, because it might not be the way you played, mm-hmm. perhaps when you were little. The thing I wanted to toss out right away was mostly just that when this kind of play happens, I think it's okay to remember that I highly doubt you said to the children, today we're going to pretend that we're smoking while we're, you know, outside playing, or today, you know, the adult probably, I'm guessing, wasn't an instigator to this kind of, you know, socio-dramatic play.
Unless Miss Jenny is sneaking out of the classroom every 15 minutes to go suck a butt down at the in the parking lot, and the kids are watching from the parking
exactly.
From the playground.
Yeah, but true. And that would be influences from anybody, whether it's the parents could be smoking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've seen kids pretend that they're, you know, opening beers and watching football, you know, while they're role-playing.
Absolutely.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, let's pause there for a second and be real clear about this. Where does play come from? The topics of play come from the experiences and interests and things kids have been exposed to.
Very much so.
If it's going on in their world, it's likely it'll come up in their play. If there are people in their lives who smoking will be part of their play. If they've watched TV shows or movies or played video games or experienced guns in real life, guns are going to be part of their play, and that's just the way it is. Trying to push that stuff aside and make it taboo and ignore it and say we don't play that way here is really driving it underground, and
it's denying that child's like existence.
Yeah.
It's putting a value on the experience that they're bringing to the table, and I don't really think we think that through.
It's saying this thing that is important to you right here and right now is not allowed. It's not important. It's bullshit. We're not going to do it here.
And if you're calling yourself a play-based program, this is now something, in theory, I'm guessing, I mean, we're reading a lot into this scenario, but if that play was freely chosen and the kids started it and the kids are engaged in it, for me to stop it is essentially denying them the right to act their play out.
Yeah, exactly. When we try to intervene as adults in the topics of play that children select, we're taking a pair of scissors and separating what they're doing from actually being play.
Correct.
What they do may be a play-like activity, but when we step in and dictate like that, it's no longer play. They may move on to another type of play. They may take it underground and do it behind your back. But when we try to enforce our will on their activities, that activity is no longer play.
I think this topic sheds the light on the fact that we do at some point. I mean, as much as we think we don't need to deal with any of our own shit before we enter this profession, the reality is that you do. And if you don't think you have anything, you know, that causes you to like react like that, at some point kids are gonna, you know, bring to light the stuff that maybe you did or did not realize that you have some kind of a value or emotional reaction to.
Yeah.
A button of some sort.
And so we pull it apart a little bit. It goes back to Dan Hodgins and making moral issues out of developmental ones.
Which is something we need to stop doing.
And another one, a popular phrase in the show is that play is in the child, not the toy. The play comes, like we said, from their experiences and their knowledge and their interests and the things that they're thinking about. And so if we acknowledge that those two things are accurate representations of the world we're trying to create with play-based environments, then we've got to figure out ways to embrace the kinds of play that make us uncomfortable, and maybe especially embrace the kinds of play that make us uncomfortable.
Well, I think there's room to investigate why is that making you uncomfortable?
To try to dig in, why is it making us uncomfortable? And also dig in and try to figure out why are they interested in this, and also what are they getting from it?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to figure out a way to embrace this kinds of play and allow it in your environment, you're likely to get pushback from other people that are doing the moralizing that you may have set aside. And so you may need to explain to administrators or coworkers or parents why you're allowing the pretend smoking or the pretend weapons play or whatever it is. And so your job becomes being a skilled observer of play, so you can kind of pick out the learning that's going on in those activities.
I'm reminded of a Jane Healy quote. She used to say, or she probably still says it, that everything that comes in has to come out.
Yes, I just about spit tea because I was I wanted to jump up and yell yes, but had a mouthful of
yes.
Earl Grey. So
you did. We are 12-year-old boys today.
That's hilarious. That's good podcast.
People are going, wait, I missed it. Rewind.
I won't allow that kind of wordplay on this podcast. We're gonna do I need to stop this podcast and turn around and take it back to
Are you gonna make
sorry.
You didn't mean that. That's funny.
That was Bump Set Spike, and you delivered that right.
Oh wow.
So creamy.
Oh, God. Play
yes.
therapy, too. Play therapy, and I'm not a play therapist. I thought about it for a while.
Play one on a podcast.
But play a therapy. I've thought about it. But I think unwittingly I had become a play therapist. Not really. I'm not claiming any credentials. But I think without realizing it, the spaces that we were setting up were set up in such a way that children knew that they mm-hmm. could use the materials there in a way that wasn't going to have a lot of judgment, and they weren't going to be told, you know, that,
no.
You know, no, 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 no all the time. And, you know, if you're needing to build a block tower and smock it down 14 times in a row, nobody here is going to tell you no, because I believe very strongly that you're not going to continue engaging in that behavior unless you are getting something from it. And if I set the stage to where now you know I just want you to stop it because I don't like it, now I'm pouring gas on that fire. As I used to say, you're watering your weeds. And the minute that the kid knows you don't want them to be doing that, now I would say it's not even play really anymore. Now it's getting your goat,
the play evolved.
The play has evolved.
Getting your goat, capturing your goat, getting
it's
your goat on a leash is now the game. Oh, there's so much here. Let's imagine for a moment.
Cue music.
Dun, 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 dun. I'm three. I'm on the playground. You're the teacher. And I'm like, let me get in character.
we haven't had a role play session.
I know you have.
It's hard to do that on the phone. I've got to find my character. I've got to find my center. Okay. Hey, guys, let's go smoke some cigarettes and shoot up the tea party they're having over there in the dramatic play area. You know, with me? After that, we'll go down to the docks and steal some containers off the ship. Come on, guys, let's go. How do you respond to that as Lisa Murphy, early learning professional?
Well, First of all, I would be very curious to see who accepted his invitation for that kind of play, because it sounds like an exciting afternoon. I know they're not really going to do that. And on some level, the kids know that it's not really going to happen. I mean, that is true fantasy play at that juncture. Uh-huh. I mean, it's so out of line with what they're really capable of doing. They're in a fence yard, for crying out loud. We live in the prairie.
They're not even close to the dock.
There's ship coming down with the containers.
Foghorn in the background.
So I really do, and I don't even think that's like Lisa Murphy at this point in her career. I think it's where's this going to go? These are kids playing.
I love when you hear those kind of crazy things. My response was always what?
Yeah.
And
Uncle Dave must be in town. But I bet, sidebar really quick, I bet if you thought about it, there were probably certain times where there would be different play, like, peaks that you probably could link
to something
some
going,
kind of an environmental influence that wasn't there all the time.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Oh, Uncle Larry's got shore leave.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. And I'd always, my response was like, how can I make them want me to play? Could I be a thug working down at the docks? I mean, that kind of stuff. And
you can be a crate.
And yeah, I can be a crate. hey guys, I got a crowbar. You need a guy with a crowbar? No, but way too often instead of pausing and wondering where did that play come from? What can I do in this environment to support it?
Is it hurting anybody?
Yeah, all those kind of things. Our response becomes, how do I shut this down? And
kids are sensitive and intuitive enough to know that if the adult starts giving off that body language of like, you know, and then you I can see it in my head right now acting out, like one or two kids kind of doing that sneaky side eye to the adult, like how she's responding to the, you know, what's going to happen here? My thought right now in the heat of the moment is that, do you think that if the environment is smaller, read 6 to 12 kids with one person.
Yep.
Do you think that somehow this kind of play gets more of a light shown on it simply just from a numbers game? That if there was 40...
Wouldn't even notice.
If there's 49 kids running around the yard, you know, you're more giving a global glance versus if there's only 7, you can't not see that kind of play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you find that maybe you become more comfortable just simply from the environment being in such a way that there were more children? I don't know.
Well, we talked about this a couple Wednesdays ago on the Wednesday night chat thing. We'll try to remind you all more about that by the end of the show. But we're talking about somebody supervising, two people like supervising 200 kids, I think it was. And I get to talk, remembering, you know, school recess back in the late 70s, where the teacher, she's sucking on her Virginia Slims and has her whistle around her neck and wearing the go-go boots and
getting ready to go down to the docks.
Yeah, going down to the docks and pick up a sailor or something. I don't know. But, I mean, we're all running around and she's the only one supervising. And so we got away with a lot of stuff, but mostly what we got away with was play. Mm-hmm. Because there she had so much to keep her eye on. She was looking for the bloody noses and that kind of stuff instead of micromanaging what were going on. So if this question is how to handle children role-playing life experiences that we might be uncomfortable with, I guess the first how to handle is
observe.
Observe.
Don't react.
Don't react.
React. You know what I'm saying? Don't.
Yeah.
Don't automatically shut it down because it makes you uncomfortable.
I think pausing is a valuable activity when it comes to handling this kind of stuff.
I think asking yourself, is this a new play? So I think there's room to be like, detective. Oh, this is the first time I've seen this kind of play. Huh.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe I'll make a note of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or has this been an ongoing pattern and I'm just finally getting fed up with it? Yeah. Like, yeah, that response is going to be very different.
I think asking, why am I bothered by this, if you're indeed bothered by it, might be a valuable question.
So it's not really handling the children. It's more handling your own emotions.
Ooh. Which allows you to handle
the children. Yeah.
Yeah, handling your response to it. Mm-hmm. But what I wouldn't do is jump in and stop it. What I wouldn't do is jump in and do some moralizing about, oh, smoking is bad. Well, you know what? Four-year-olds in the world today probably have a pretty good idea that smoking isn't a good choice because they've been scolded not to rest with mommy's cigarettes and those kind of things. And they went to Uncle Larry's funeral and because he died of lung cancer and all that stuff is going on. And that is part of the reason they're playing at this is because there's a lot of energy around it. And it came into their head, and so it's going to come out in their activity. They're trying to make sense of it. And the same goes for the weapons play. And if you're looking for a deep dive into weapons play, over at the Renegade Rules podcast, Heather Shoemaker and I recorded 4 episodes. It's about 180 minutes or something of weapons play podcasts. And so those are probably out by the time you're hearing this one. If not, they'll be released soon. And we dig into that a little bit because there's a lot more there in some of these kinds of play than we realize. And things like the weapons play and the smoking and death play and sex kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot there. So I mean,
well, I think this is one of those topics I think that has 99 layers to that onion, mm-hmm. and I mm-hmm. find random things jumping in my head that might not be linked to what you just said, but I do believe as professionals in the field, you need to have a Rolodex. I'm using a very outdated term. Google it, right? if you're young, and back in the old days, we had this circular spinning thing on our desk that essentially had tons of business cards in it. My point is that if you're going to be in this industry for a while, I think you should have in your wheelhouse people that you can network with or refer out to or find out if, you know, when does some of that play cross that line to where you do need to bring somebody in that maybe something else might be going on. So yes, there is room to say that the child might be acting out experiences that they have. And at some point, you know, play does sometimes occur that gives a big window into stuff that shouldn't be happening to the child.
Exactly.
And you do mm-hmm. need to know, you know, we're not in any way saying that, you know, never to go beyond letting it play out.
There
could at some point in your career be a time when you do need to reach out to, you know, other trained professionals.
Definitely.
To give you some support or some resources.
Yeah. And so part of dealing with this kind of play is calibrating your spidey sense.
Yes. Very much
when,
so.
When you think playing smoking cigarettes or playing lightsaber battle, when seeing those, and then the kind of play where somebody's getting touched show me on the doll where you got touched.
Yeah.
There's a broad difference between those kinds of play, and putting a lot of energy into all of them is kind of a waste of some of your energy, but knowing how to effectively respond when you see those kinds of play that get that tidy, that spidey sense tingling, is a good thing because those are certainly places where you're going to want to intervene.
Definitely, definitely.
And so, I mean, the takeaway is the way to respond to this is to respond less.
I think you can react less.
Okay,
I think you're still responding. I mean, I'm still
you're responding with observation.
Observing.
Yeah.
Not to turn it into a semantics
No,
drill,
but yeah,
but,
yeah.
But
no, that's
I'm not walking
right.
out of the room just going, man, whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still paying
attention. Yeah, see you guys.
See?
Have a good time with the docs. Yeah, remember.
Here's $20. Put it on number 5.
Yeah, you guys gonna play some crap.
Snake
eyes.
Yeah. Going to the track afterwards.
Play the pony.
There you go.
Because it's pee week.
So I don't know if this is the kind of answer the question asker was.
Well, there was some commentary after that I don't know if it's necessarily that we need to unpack it, but I'll toss it out there that play can be representing a power struggle. I'm not sure the context here of that. It's a power struggle between the adult and the child. Like the child maybe knows that this topic is going to set you off, which we kind of touched on already, and also that it's important to find different ways to teach others that this type of play is good
mm-hmm.
and necessary. Sometimes therapeutically very, very necessary.
Yeah.
And sometimes in just that these are children playing together and potentially they're using some symbols or some language that is causing us to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, because while we may not be play therapists, children are. And they're putting themselves through little micro doses of play therapy all the time in their play, trying to figure out things that they've experienced in their life and make sense of them. And as far as the power struggle thing, asking yourself, is this kid playing this thing because they know I don't like it and trying to get under my skin? Or are they playing this thing because they need to play this thing and I think they're doing it to get under my skin? Those are two vastly different things. And being the only adult in the situation, often it becomes our job to decide how we're going to respond to either one of them, whatever the...
And it could be a power struggle in the sense that what the adult might be interpreting as a conflict between children really is children playing at either having a power struggle or playing at having a conflict. But depending on what maybe buttons would get pushed... Again, you're going to have that reaction and maybe see something there that really isn't there.
Yeah, yeah. And so do we need to reemphasize here, we've talked about it before, but not all play is happy, cotton candy, rainbow, unicorns. A lot of play goes into very dark, serious places that may come across as somebody outside the play as a real conflict. Would you like to plug a book?
Well, briefly, yes, and hopefully he's going to be somebody that we interview while I'm here this week, but a colleague and friend Shepard Siegel out from Seattle wrote a book recently called Disruptive Play, The Trickster in Politics and Culture, and he does go into some of that, what we would call deep, dark play.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's part of the process, and I mean, the way you learn...
Sorry, the dog just got freaked out.
Pod dog got scared by a wire or something. Yeah, the coyote. So, I mean, there's a lot of pieces here, and mostly our job is to let the play unfold and support it and find a way to deal with whatever baggage we're carrying around the issue, and maybe pay attention to the learning that's going on, because it's there. I mean, just briefly, the weapons play. There's lots of social stuff going on there. There's lots of large and small body stuff going on. There's lots of problem solving stuff going on. Lots of language.
Social cues.
Yeah. So there's a lot of value to these kinds of play. And so if we're gonna figure out how to support these kinds of play, knowing, being able to identify those bits of learning so we can articulate them to parents and coworkers and administrators is probably valuable. But one of the ways we should not deal with them probably is jumping in and stopping it right away, unless we really are getting a tingly, spidey sense that there's an issue here, that it's one of those somebody's getting molested kind of situations that we really need to touch base on and follow up on. Any more on this before we wrap it up?
I think there's room to give a loving reminder that just because children are engaged in something that you wouldn't do doesn't mean that it's not worth doing, right? So you might not go around playing like you're smoking cigarettes. I mean, just now you've got me locked on that now, going down to the dock. You know, that might be, you know, your role play scenario or your sociodramatic play scenario, but that doesn't mean that you need to shut this one
down. Yeah, and maybe take a small trip down memory lane and actually do some thinking about
the way
you used to play.
That's actually very therapeutic.
Because a lot of adults, they kind of block out a lot of the stuff they played when they were kids, and you might find some of this in your own history, and the chances are you probably ended up as a functioning adult that's making your way through life okay. So, I mean, it's not like playing these kind of things. It's not like the kids that play, they're smoking and going down the dock to rob the cargo ship are going to actually grow up and do that. Now, some of them, some of them might, and I mean...
A dream of theirs.
That's probably...
Beth said we had childhood amnesia, and that one of the best ways to reconnect adults with the power of play was to give them opportunities on a regular basis to play themselves. So whether that playing actually awoke memories that they had forgotten about when they were little, or whether it was kind of filling a void that had been empty that whole time, you know, adults at play is not frivolous at all, especially if you're facilitating play amongst children. It really is an investment, I think, for us to continue deepening our understanding of the importance of play.
Absolutely. And if you want to continue deepening your understanding of all things, or maybe not all things early learning, but some things early learning, join us Wednesday night, 7:30 Central, for ECE Live. That's Early Childhood Live, Early Childhood Education Live, ECE Live, I think is what we called it. If you go over to Explorations Early Learning on the Facebook and look at events, you'll see the event there, and it's pretty much you click the link if you've got a web-enabled device, and you can join us via your phone or your iPad or your computer, and we're just kind of chatting early learning stuff. Sometimes the conversation is stuff that came up in the podcast. Sometimes it's everybody venting about what kind of a week I had, but it's something new we're giving a try in the new year, so pop on over and join us, won't you? Thanks for listening. Back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Oh, ciao. Is it time for chow?
Yes.
Time to make the meatballs.
Time to make the meatballs. Hey, I'm going to make the meatballs. See, if
what is this? It's the accent day.
I don't know.
It's Sunday accent day.
Yeah, Sunday accent day. Okay, I'm going to stop the recording button now. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.